know what? Everything has its revolution. Everything has its evolution. I mean, things change. Nothing stays the same. And my goodness, welcome to the ever true evolving saga of steroids for fetal lung maturation. That is having a revolution right now. Boy, is it. Now, I have to give a little disclosure. Right now, ACOG is in the process of redrafting Committee Opinion 713, which has to do with antenatal corticosteroids for fetal lung maturation. Because, man, a lot has happened since that. Yes, there's been practice activity updates and some new clinical guidance, but everything now is coming to a head, even questioning the dose of steroids that we use. Because new evidence is that whether we're doing dexamethasone or betamethasone, the standard and typical dose is probably way too high. So a lot of changes is coming to antenatal corticosteroids for fetal lung maturation. Now, a lot of stuff still needs to be figured out, but in general, there is definitely a revolution going on. So in this episode, we're going to tackle the steroid saga. More info, more debate, more news. Here we go. Just trying to keep everyone up to date on evidence-based practice because medicine moves real fast. This is Clinical Pearls.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Oh, man. All right. So lots to cover here. Of course, we've been tracking this whole steroid business for a while, even when the ALPS trial first came out, saying that maybe we should be considering giving steroids in the late preterm, early term interval. We covered all that. We've recently covered how a lot of professional organizations and societies have moved away from recommending steroids in the late preterm, early term interval because of very modest benefits, mainly just respiratory stuff, with the potential for some real concern there, mainly with neurodevelopmental outcomes, especially in those that go on to deliver at term. So the question has always been, well, what is the right dose, meaning how many milligrams? What's the right interval? I mean, should it be 24 hours? Is it 12 hours for dexamethasone times 4? Where did that come from? We're going to discuss that in this episode. But things are moving real fast. As I mentioned, ACOG is in the process of drafting a new revision for Committee Opinion 713, because that goes all the way back to 2017, guys. Now, obviously, the college has put out a lot of different documents regarding steroids since that, but that's the parent, right? So the original document, 713, goes back 2017. And then you have Practice Bulletin 171, Practice Bulletin 188. You've got the Practice Advisory 2021, which moves steroids down to 22 weeks. And then the one about recognizing the ALPS trial came out in 2021. So... Now, if you're thinking, well, what could we possibly talk about now? We've already talked about how everyone is kind of poo-pooing the late preterm, early term steroids, and they really are. I mean, I was on the early adoption where I'm like, hey, this is great. Why not? It doesn't seem to hurt any. And then the data started coming back. You're like, ooh, maybe it's not so good. Now, ALPS, to be fair, ALPS does have some follow-up, some six-year data from that original trial on neurodevelopmental outcomes. They're like, hey, we don't see any, there's no problem here, guys. I mean, they seem to be okay, but there's a catch. Less than half of the children that were exposed to the medication actually had that follow-up, right? So I want to be very clear, that data from the ALPS trial was eventually published on long-term neurodevelopmental outcomes, but it was less than half, all right? So it raises a lot of concern still, especially with all of the other burden of data that's like, hey, we've been looking at this, and there's maybe some issues here, especially in regards to how that high-dose corticosteroid, glucocorticoid, affects myelination in the developing brain. That's where a lot of myelin is being deposited, a lot of changes going on right before birth, and then obviously past birth in the postnatal period, the brain's still evolving. So we give it a big stunting medication like steroids, and there's flags for concern. I've already covered this. I don't want to get into it, but just as a brief recap, if you did not hear that previous episode, which you're missing out, you really do need to go back and listen to that. But look who's dropped that recommendation of giving steroids after 34 weeks, right? So it's the European Consensus Guidelines on the Management of Respiratory Distress Syndrome. That was out in, first one was 2019. Like, I don't know, we need more follow-up data. And then in 2022, they're like, yep, we're good. We're not doing that after 34 weeks. Let's just stop there because of fears of adverse neurocognitive and psychological outcomes. So we're not doing that. Then, of course, you've got the Green Top guideline from the RCOG. That's the Royal College that's number 74. That came out as well, saying, no, we're not doing that. There's too many questions here. There's very few benefits. So X and A on that. So they gave that up not that long ago. Then there's FIGO, which in 2021 reversed it. They're like, hey, maybe we should consider this. And then they literally changed it to, nope, we're good. We're not going to pursue that after 34 weeks. World Association of Perinatal Medicine in 2022. Also advises against the routine use of steroids after 34 weeks. And then just last year in 2023, the Society of Obstetrics, Gynecology in Canada, SOGC, said, no, we're done with that. We're really not going to do that. Or if you're going to do that, you've got to document very well that it is shared decision-making and the kid is really going to deliver under 37 weeks. So just a couple of quick highlights there of some people who have dropped the recommendation in the late preterm, early term interval. That's not what we're focusing on here. I really want to focus on a new publication that came out just last month, which was April 2024, from the Gray Journal. And we're going to piece together a lot of different information from 2018 on, that has called into question the whole 12 milligrams of betamethasone times 2, 6 milligrams of dex times 4. Because think about it, I learned that. That's just what you did. You know where that came from? The 1960s in sheep. And it was a continuous infusion. That was the original bench trials, animal trials, from Liggins and Howey. And thank God for them. I mean, they changed. I've said many times before, I received steroids as a premature kid on the border of Texas. We're like, this dude's a goner. I mean, I was born, guys, at 28 weeks. Like, limit of viability was like 30 weeks, all right? Or was it 30 or 32? I think it was 32. Like, this little dude ain't going to make it. Now, so and it was still experimental at that time, but as I was told the story, my mother received steroids and I delivered premature into the old, incubator. I have little pictures of me and it looked like an iron lung, for heaven's sakes. I'm like, what the heck did you all put me in? It looks like a microwave. But the point is, I attribute some of my survival to steroids that at that time were still just experimental, because that study was published in 1972. And of course, there were laggards of adopters. And so I'm very proud that that physician, I'm very thankful that that physician who took care of me on the border, I mean, had heard of these whiffs of this medicine that could potentially help premature infants. And it worked. In Spanish, there's the term is called El Milagro. Okay, El Milagro. It stands in English, translates to the miracle. And so I have a picture of my little iron lung looking incubator with me in it and a little sticker on it called El Milagro, because this joker just wouldn't die. That was me. I'm like, I got stuff to do. So I'm very thankful. So I'm very steroid friendly when it's appropriate. Now, those original studies from the 60s and 70s that use that high dose of glucocorticoid, think about it, guys. That's a whopping dose. I mean, look what it does to mom's sugars. Look what it does to demargination. That's why they all get these, leukocytosis, because the body goes from 0 to 60 in minutes from the high dose of steroid that it's exposed to. The question is that necessary, and where'd that even come from? And you'll be surprised. So we're going to talk about all of this in this episode, because there's new data that says, man, we are like using the shotgun approach here for the baby's lungs when we really probably need a small pellet gun. Did y'all get that? So we're just blasting it. And it may actually work against the effect. Wow. So when I say we're talking about a revolution in steroid use, well, number one, while we pull the rubber band back and went all the way back for the ALPS trial, bam, and now it's, as we've released, and now it's going back to center. We're like, oh, maybe let's not do that. Let's stick with 24 to 34 as the main legit thing, and then moving it down to 22 to 24 if desired. Okay. Remember, still, there's no benefit under 22 weeks as far as we know right now. There just isn't the physiological maturation and anatomical maturation for steroids to do anything there. The phases of lung development are just not responsive to the steroid, because type 1 and type 2 pneumocytes aren't really on the scene yet. So 22 weeks with shared decision making is as early as down as it goes. But I want to focus on this. Remember, the revolution has to do with dose. Now, I don't want to give any illusions here. No, ACOG is not thinking about changing the dose right now, nor is this new committee opinion going to say, don't do the standard, because that's been established in medicine for 50 years. However, what I am saying is that look at the data, that there really are things percolating here, guys. If the water in the pot is the topic of steroids for fetal lung maturity, it's not settling. It's bubbling, the heat is on, and there's new things coming. And I'm telling you that what's been published already on the pharmacokinetic and pharmacodynamic aspects of these two medications, dex and betamethasone, is that we're over-treating. And there's already trials that are looking at using half of that current dose to get effect. Like maybe just one dose of betamethasone, 12 milligrams, and then you walk away and then that's it. Or 6 milligrams of dex, or 12 milligrams of dex, and then you leave it alone. Because we are, well, here it is, guys, in the nutshell, but please listen to the rest because it's super interesting. The nutshell is, yeah, super physiologic. And the data is that we would probably get the result with about 70% less medication. So what is ACOG Committee Opinion 713 going to focus on? It's going to focus on a lot, the new restrictions on late preterm steroid administration and the controversy with that. It's going to merge all of the other individual committee opinions and practice advisories into one parent document. It's going to talk about accelerated dosing. Is that a thing? Well, while you can probably give an accelerated dose, it makes more sense, though, if we now know that we're over-treating, you probably don't have to. probably can just do one. So, and I've done it. I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if we're going to get a whole 24 hours of betamethasone, so we're going to repeat the injection in 12 hours. So in 12-hour interval, they get 24 milligrams of a glucocorticoid. That's a lot. Okay, that's a lot. So while there's some very limited some very conflicting data on accelerated dosing, why that may not even be an issue. It's like a moot point to discuss because one dose may be enough. Okay, so it's going to talk about some of this in there. Now, I want to be very, very clear. That has not started its review yet. It's up for a revision. The authors have been identified. The data has been collected. And I'm not giving out anything that is proprietary. Let me just say right here, this is all public information, all from literature searches. And the reason I know that is because I did that literature search for this revision, which I'm very thankful for. And I'm going to say it here. I literally, guys, I've been out, you know, for 20 years. I've been practicing. I love the data. I think I got my grasp, my pulse on this. But thank you very much. I'm very honored. I am one of the authors contributing to this revision for ACOG Committee Opinion 713. What? So I have to tell you, I've got like huge imposter syndrome. I hope you never lose that because, wow, I'm like, what? I'm like, surely there's somebody else more qualified. They're like, listen, you did the review, you got the data, it makes sense. I mean, be part of the authorship to review this. So yes, when even saying that triggers my IBS. Can I just say that? Like, I'm about to go like to the toilet for like 10 minutes just because I said this. It is wigging me out. And don't expect this to come out in 2 months. That's not how it works, y'all. I mean, we got it. It's a team. We're all going to divide this into sections. Then it gets a preliminary draft, yada, yada. Then there's a second one. And then it goes up to the Obstetrical Care Consensus Committee. And then they tear it apart. I mean, they critique it. And then it gets a final approval. Then it gets typeset. And then it goes out. So we're talking about a good 6 to 8 months. But it makes the point. We're covering this right now at the start of April. Oh, it's April 1st. It's April Fool's Day. This is not an April Fool's thing, by the way. Oh, do people still do that? People are so sensitive now. If you do an April Fool's joke, someone's like going to cry. So, I don't know. Is that still a thing? I grew up in Laredo on the border. Man, it was some crazy stuff. I remember the Laredo Morning News when I was a kid. Did a whole front page story of it. Well, it was something weird, and I just remember going, what is happening? What? And it was kind of like sad and catastrophic at the same time. And then at the end, it said April Fool's Day. How about that for kind of kicking in the pants, huh? That was the Laredo Morning. That was the newspaper that punked everybody on the front page of Laredo Morning News. I guess I was like fifth grade or sixth grade, something like that. And people were like, oh, ha, 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 you got me. Yeah, now somebody would like sue. It's crazy. It's a whole other world. All to say that things are changing. So I wanted this to be a point of discussion. Y'all, this is a great Journal Club topic. Are we giving too much? So as of right now, to be clear, don't be bootlegging your doses of steroids. Right now, stick with what is typical and standard, which is 12 milligrams of betamethasone times 2, 24 hours apart, dexamethasone 6 milligrams, 12 hours apart times 4, until something officially changes. But I wanted you to be aware of the fact when you know, nursing staff or your PA or your partner says, oh man, we only got one dose of steroid in. So, I mean, as long as it's at least 4 hours, it's like GBS coverage. There should be some effect. So the old interval that the administration to delivery interval, which was, you know, maximal is 2 to 7 days, even that's questionable. Like, no, man, that joker starts to work within 24 hours. Like at 4 hours, there's some effect. At 8 hours, there's a little bit more effect. At 12 hours, you've got a little more effect. And then you kind of peak at 24, and it kind of levels out and it starts going down. And there's some data that at this whopping dose that we're giving, the effect continues past 7 days, like up to 2 weeks. That's why repeat doses, even 7 days later, may not be needed. So there's a lot of controversy here. ACOG does say right now that if the threat of preterm labor exists and continues or persists beyond 7 days, you can consider a one additional course a steroid, right? We know that. However, that may not be necessary. That's a lot of steroid. That's what I'm trying to get here, guys, is that we've kind of were super laissez-faire, super cavalier about steroids. It was like Oprah, right? You get a steroid. And now we're like, holy shit, that's a lot of steroids. Let's bring it back, boys. Bring it back. Because there's a lot of physiological suppression of the hypothalamic pituitary uterine axis. There's a lot of metabolic disturbances. There's imprinting that goes on, especially late preterm. Guys, a revolution in steroids is definitely underway, definitely going back to a much more conservative approach. All right, let's bring this back to ACOG Committee Opinion 713 from August 2017. I'm looking at it right now, and it says, a single repeat course of antenatal corticosteroids should be considered in women who are less than 34 weeks, who are at risk of preterm delivery within 7 days, and whose prior course of antenatal corticosteroids were administered more than 14 days previously, but rescue course corticosteroids could be provided as early as 7 days from the prior dose as clinically indicated. So that's something else that we've discussed in the revision team is, wait, what? Did you all get that? I'm reading it directly from the current committee opinion. You can give it 14 days later, but you can really give it at 7. Well, just say 7. I mean, as early as 7. The 14-day thing is irrelevant. Do you see how confusing that is? Do you see how... And I'm not throwing this under the bus. I'm really not. I'm just saying sometimes we're so stinking academic and cerebral. I mean, what? You can give it 14 days after the last dose, but as early as 7. Well, damn, just say you can give it at 7. So that's one of the revisions that's going to happen. It's just making it simple. You can give it as early as 7 days after if you deem it necessary. However, based on new pharmacokinetic and pharmacodynamic study, due to the potential prolonged effect of a single course, that may not be necessary. More data is needed. How about that? That's kind of the language coming in here. Now, the reason that was originally put in there was that if you give, look how this is important, redosing may be a thing based on when you give it. So that if you give it at 32 weeks and then they're undelivered and they're threatening again a week later at 33, don't give them another dose. They're going to be fine. Their lungs have the ability to respond. However, if the first dose was given at 23 weeks and then they hold off and then they potentially go into labor, say again at 30 weeks, I mean, please don't go, well, we gave her a dose at 22 to 23 weeks. Man, those lungs may not have responded. Probably try to give another dose in that regard because it's at least 7 days and you're not sure if the response was there that early. Does that make sense? So in general, the data show that the response starts, obviously starting as early as some benefit at 22, although that's not as sure as like 24, 25, and 26, where it decreases the risk of severe respiratory issues along with severe complications like interventricular hemorrhage, all right? So that's why you have to put that in there versus don't give it at all. Because if the original dose was at, again, 32 weeks, that's going to mean a lot. That's probably going to be more harmful to give another dose if they completed a course already as compared to if the first course was given like at 23 weeks where the lungs may not have responded. Does that make sense? So it's a function of gestational age. So that's going to have to be revised with the next go around. All right. Again, not what I was supposed to be talking about. But I just wanted to focus on this. Let's come back to what I really wanted to focus on, which is this issue of the dose, okay? Because if you ever thought, well, I guess it's just a legit thing. I mean, the reason that we do the doses that we do in the interval that we do is because it's legit. I mean, there has to be bench and blood work modeling that shows that that's right. Well, we now have that information, but it wasn't originally there in the late 1960s, 1972, when Howie and Liggins first came up with their data. Thank you for being part of our podcast family. We really are grateful and thankful that you've chosen to take this journey of medical education with us. You're listening to Clinical Pearls. We do need to recognize and give a shout out to these physicians, Dr. Ross Howie, who actually was, his area of focus was pediatrics, and Dr. Liggins, Graham Liggins, both of who launched this whole revolution in neonatal and pediatric medicine, and not U.S. So just give proper credit to where they go. I mean, it's not all about, well, you know, us here in the States, although internationally, I know it sounds like and looks like we're all pretty self-absorbed here, and we are. But these, let's give recognition. This was out of Auckland, out of New Zealand. The pioneers, man, I want to do something like that. I mean, I want my legacy, like I've said before, to be my children, what I leave for them. And I don't mean from a material standpoint. I mean, legacy, like hard work, dedication, hopefully strive for excellence. That's what I'm trying to, work ethic, that kind of thing. But man, these two physicians who dedicated their whole professional careers really to helping with fetal lung maturation and oxygenation, just incredible. But yeah, out of Auckland, New Zealand, still a great area where a lot of research comes out today. But based on that original work where they said, hey, we infused a little sheep model, this dose seemed to work, let's stick with that. And everybody said, okay, let's do it. Do you know that current dose was really based on that sheep model, and it never had any human pharmacokinetic or pharmacodynamic data? It did it. Like, hey, it worked. Let's just kind of do it over here in humans with an IM injection versus a infusion. And that's pretty much how it went. Now, a lot of authors, including the one from this publication that we're about to highlight here, which just came out March 2024, in the Gray Journal, the title of which is Antenatal Corticosteroids, an Updated Assessment of Anticipated Benefits and Potential Risks. Did y'all get that title, guys? Exactly what we're talking about. Published as a clinical opinion piece, March 2024. So if you think, Chapa, you're on some kind of weird high horse, brother. I mean, nobody cares. Just give the damn dose of steroid and walk away. No, this is in our print. And it's been in the print by the same like handful of guys. I mean, you've got Kemp, you've got Alan Jobe. These are pioneers. You've got Goldenberg, who are like, guys, why has nobody questioned this? This is way too much. And now we have bench tests and even in human studies that have shown, yeah, this is probably a lot of medication that we're exposing, not just the baby to, but to the mother as well. A nice review from this is out of Seminars in Fetal and Neonatal Medicine from June 2019, and it's by Kemp. And oddly enough, hello, Alan Jobe, same people here, right? They've been saying this for years. So again, as ACOG is not ready right now to go, let's go half dose, not quite there yet, but maybe. And I'm giving this to you early on that there's a lot of, again, that water is boiling, going, we're causing supra physiologic levels of therapy here. And this is the next realm. The next area of study is, why do we get this right? I mean, should it be based on body mass index? Should it be based on BSA? Should it just be based on a flat lower dose? But nobody is now questioning that this is too much. We are giving the dose given is overkill, and now that's come to light. All right. So for the original data that Liggins did, which was back in 1969 in fetal sheep, he said, "Hey, we need something that's going to quickly deliver the medicine across the placental barrier and then disassociate from this compound and go into the lungs." So he used a mixture of soluble beta methasone phosphate. Okay, and a slow release form called betamethasone acetate. Right? So when we say, well, let's give her a betamethasone celestone, the original, to be honest, is a combination medication. So see what your pharmacy has. And most use betamethasone phosphate and the slow release form, which is betamethasone acetate. Now, why it matters, I'll tell you here in a minute, that it seems that only one of these medications is actually doing the trick. The one that's likely responsible for the benefit is not both of them. Most of the pharmacokinetic and pharmacodynamic data suggests that betamethasone acetate, so BA, betamethasone acetate, BA, is the critical medication to give the effect here. And the phosphorylated form is probably less effective than the betamethasone in its acetate form. Is that fascinating or what? So, I mean, he didn't know. I mean, he's like, hey, let's pick something, and we're going to do this one-to-one prodrug combo, betamethasone phosphate, and then have it dissociate into the fetal lung, and then betamethasone acetate. So this combination gave that the betamethasone the ability to cross through the placenta and give a long fetal exposure to replicate what he was seeing in the fetal infusion studies of little sheep, all right? So remember, in the sheep, it wasn't even IM. Those were infusion. And so this is a way to kind of give a sustained exposure, especially over 12 to 24 hours. So this became a 12-milligram injection. 6 milligrams was as the phosphate, and the other 6 milligrams were as the acetate. So that's when we say 12 milligrams, that's the original combination. That's typically what's still used in practice today. Pharmacological studies of the drug type and the dose actually weren't performed. It was just carried over by what should work as a sustained release in a human as what was given to the sheep through an infusion. The other widely used antenatal corticosteroid, of course, is dexamethasone phosphate, which is given as 4 6 milligram dosages, each at 12-hour intervals. And the reason that was chosen is because that mirrors the total dose of 24 milligrams of betamethasone given as 2 injections. All right, you all, let's just start getting to it. Here's where we're at as of April 2024. Recent data from sheep and human studies show that with regard to acute respiratory function, the, quote, current dosing regimens results in both mother and fetus being exposed to unnecessarily high doses of steroids, end quote. That comes out of a publication that's actually not like this year or last year. That was back in 2014 out of the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. So what happened? I mean, we've got these forms, these publications that were very well done that's now a decade old with people calling the whistle going, hey, guys, all that we're doing here, we can help the lung a little bit, but we're giving severe disruption to the maternal HPA axis. We're kind of stunting fetal growth, even with this dose as a one course. It's a lot of exposure. That was 10 years ago. And now we've got data since that keeps saying the same thing. We are likely overdosing here. Uh-oh, wait a minute. I said overdosing. That sounded ugly, right? I mean, I don't mean like overdosing like they're toxic or, you know, fatal. I mean, we're giving them too much of a dose. How about that? The word overdosage kind of seems to have connotations, but you know what I mean. And it's been, again, year after year, 2019. Here's a great review from 2018 from the Gray Journal. This was a really nice publication that showed the exact same thing. Quote, the efficacy of antenatal steroid therapy is dependent on the duration of, here it is, guys, low concentration fetal exposure, meaning what we're giving at this normal dose, whether it's dex or betamethasone, is super high level. Then it comes down, and while the lungs get an initial, hey, okay, I'm ready to go, the effect may be not as well as it would be if it was a lower dose. How about that? So there's another publication from that same author, Kemp, that published in 2018 that found that the optimal lung maturation was actually achievable using a steroid dose, quote, 70% less than the current clinical treatment, end quote. 70% less. Wow. And it's not just these same authors. There's Fee et al. I'm looking at it right now. They published this review in the American Journal of Physiology and Lung Cellular and Molecular Physiology. Man, that's one title, that's one journal's name. That's way too long. That was published in 2022. That said the exact same thing. We're giving supraphysiologic therapeutic dosages of this medication, and a lower dose, like 8 milligrams of betamethasone, is likely to have the same result as a standard dose. So now they're saying, hey, you've got 24 milligrams as a total course. If you go half, that's probably okay. And then this publication showed that 8 milligrams can get the job done. So this is where Again, the title, remember that the intro song was, there's a revolution going on here. I'm not sure when this data is officially going to get incorporated. I know that there's trials doing this right now, but it's not going to stay the same forever, guys. Is that crazy or what? After 50 years, it's like the progesterone story, right? I am progesterone for preterm labor. Like, hey, this is a thing. We're going to keep on doing this. And now it's completely changed. Like, yeah, maybe, but only vaginal and only with a history of preterm labor and only with a short cervix. And that's got its own separate controversy. The point is, don't think things can't change. Because while that was integrated into practice, look how the prolonged trial changed all of that. So, yes, as of right now, stick with the current dose. But my point in bringing this together is, number one, this was out in print last month in the Gray Journal. Number two, if somebody ever tells you, well, should we give her a dose right now? I mean, she's not going to get the full course. Yes, because the dose is pretty damn high and there's benefit even within 24 hours. ACOG's Committee Opinion 713 already says that. It said that back then. Even if you can't get a full course in, there's benefit within 24 hours, give it. And you don't need, and there's probably not a need to accelerate the dose, even though there's a small prospective and a retrospective study that show that you could do that, but it's probably not necessary because we're over-treating as it is. Is that wild or what? As we get ready to wrap this up, there is a target level in the recipient, okay, in the fetus that's been quantified. Right, so it seems that at a dose of 1 to 4 nanograms per ml, that we're talking about in the recipient, so in the fetus, all right, this is mainly in sheep and monkey models. So assuming that it's the same thing for human trials, which is what all the data is suggesting, then we are giving a dose of plasma level into the child that's way, way too high. As we wrap this up, let me read you a direct quote from Kemp's publication from June 2019 in Seminars in Fetal and Neonatal Medicine. I really like this statement because it puts into perspective that, wow, why are we still doing the same dose? Why has nobody changed this? Nobody's questioned the status quo, all right? So let me read you this quote. The authors state, the fetal plasma values from 12 milligrams of betamethasone phosphate and acetate mixture or 6 milligrams dexamethasone phosphate are substantially above this target range in the early period after maternal treatment. Not only is the current dose excessive, only one component of the betamethasone injection is likely responsible for the benefits noted. Pharmacodynamic studies suggest that betamethasone acetate is the critical component of the standard antenatal corticosteroid treatment and that the phosphorylated drug alone is less effective than the standard combined betamethasone preparation unless given 4 times, end quote. In other words, we can probably decrease the dose and the schedule frequency by simply giving the one that's probably doing most of the action, which is betamethasone acetate. So what's being questioned? The dose and the scheduling. Guys, lots of changes going on. I told you, it's like there's a revolution happening. Just something to discuss amongst yourselves. Discuss amongst yourselves at the water cooler. And if somebody says, oh, you really are going to give her a dose? She's only going to be like, she's going to be delivered within 12 hours. Yes. We're going to give her a dose because it's probably super physiological, and even that has some benefit. All right, let's start bringing this home. All right, podcast family, that brings us to a wrap. As always, we're thankful for you, and we're glad you're part of our podcast community. We'll see you on another episode of Clinical Pearls.